Today on Breezy Breakfast, we hear from representatives of a community-led tiny home project. Liz Hales is a primary health care nurse practitioner who's been working with underhoused and homeless folks in Guelph for almost 25 years. Ingrid Oles is an outreach worker who helps people access all sorts of health and social services. Liz and Ingrid speak of the challenges of safely housing our outdoor neighbors. They describe the challenges regarding shelter systems, mental health and substance abuse disorders, and harm reduction models of care. Our audience learns why a community-led initiative, rather than a city-led effort, might result in housing people more quickly. Now over to our moderator, Tanya.
Today, we're learning about a community initiative with the goal of helping people to get in out of the cold. As we gather, let us take time to reflect on our privilege to live and work in Guelph, a city built over rich Indigenous histories. We are guests here, and we should reflect upon the responsibility to care for this land, the people who live here today, and the generations to come. If our actions today can move us towards reconciliation, we should take pause and make those decisions with intention and gratitude. This place we call Guelph has served as traditional lands and a place of refuge for many peoples over time, but more specifically, the Adirondack and the Haudenosaunee. This land is held as the treaty lands and territory with the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. Guelph lies directly adjacent to the Haldimand Tract and is part of a long-established traditional hunting ground for the Six Nations of the Grand River. Many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples who have come from across Turtle Island call Guelph home today. So we have two guests today. Liz Hales is a primary healthcare nurse practitioner. She has been working with underhoused and homeless folks in Guelph for almost 25 years. Ingrid Oles is an outreach worker, helping people access all sorts of health and social services. Liz and Ingrid work with many of the same people. Liz, would you please tell us about this community-led initiative?
So I'll tell you a little bit about this Guelph Tiny Homes Coalition we are right now. In my work, as Tanya said, I work with many people who are underhoused or homeless, find themselves homeless. And I, as a lot of us, just becoming more and more despairing of people's situation, living what we call rough, which is living outside, maybe in tents, maybe not in tents, maybe lying on the sidewalk. And it was pretty distressing over the winter, as always. I spoke to my partner about it, as you do, and at a Rotarian meeting, he met someone else who was also interested in maybe doing something. So we quickly, it really kind of grassroots, got some people together from various walks of life, lots of us in health and social services, some builders, people from faith communities, people with political skills. And we went for a visit to the Better Tent City in Kitchener and also the other community in Waterloo on Herb Street and had a look around, really liked the Better Tent City model. And this was actually the end of January. So it's all happened pretty quickly. Things are happening really fast. Our vision is to have ultimately 50 tiny homes on a piece of land, which would ideally be city land that is serviced. We're not at the point of actively looking for options. We will be doing that in the next few weeks. So 50 homes with a shared kitchen facility, shared common area, showers, laundry, and supported by the social services and health agencies that are currently supporting folks. So people are currently going out to encampments, seeing people downtown at Royal City Mission, at the hotel. Those services will continue. In addition, we hope to have something like Better Tent City. They have a site, I forget her name, coordinator, Nadine, who is amazing. Everybody needs Nadine, who really is connected with the community, and she lives there. So she lives in a tiny home, and she helps to, you know, organize various things. There's a lot of there's cooperation. People have some responsibility for, you know, helping out with things. Some jobs are paid. We envision having a strong voice of the people that live there. This will be really led by the people themselves in terms of what they want, community gardens, workshop. I mean, this is all down the road. Better Tent City was an evolution, and things changed. It was certainly not, there are things that we'll take from that and things that will be more, you know, Guelph-centric and particular to this community. But I think that's it in a nutshell. Because we have the work that we do is so client-centered and trauma-informed, we hope to bring that to this project. The other important piece is not only are we seeing that the existing, whatever is existing, isn't meeting everyone's needs, and therefore people are sleeping on the sidewalk, but we also know that what shelter exists doesn't meet everyone. And so we're hoping that this isn't a solution for everyone, but this is a solution for some folks. We will still need other options for housing, transitional housing. Lots will be happening in the next few weeks, including some media, some information out to the community. But the fall, before winter, like we'd like to have some houses for people. I'll pass it to Ingrid because I'm sure I probably forgot something.
Like just like Liz said, like not every housing system in place is going to fit everybody. So this is going to fit folks where other things may not. It also gives people a lot of autonomy over their own space. A lot of people will feel more secure. The important thing is we're trying to get it off the, like on the ground before winter, because we know there are so many more health concerns and problems once winter comes, and we really want people warm and safe.
Thank you. I just want to pipe up because I want to be very, very clear that there are a couple of initiatives that are going on. Some of you might have read about an initiative that is coming from the city, which was in Guelph today, yesterday. And very, very clearly, this is different than what the city is intending on doing. And I want to be quite clear that Linda Busatil is on, and I think Aaron Caton is on as well. We have been asked for some advice and information as city councillors, and we have provided that. But what we have not done is ever presented this as a city initiative. And in my opinion, there are a number of reasons for that. I do believe that a community initiative is far more nimble and has a much greater capacity to act quickly.
What did the city announce? Something in the Guelph today.
Yeah.
It was just highlighting, it was more information about the mayor had announced, you know, the strong mayor powers that he was going to look into a structured encampment. Those are the terms that he used. And certainly prior to that announcement, we had been in contact with the mayor's office. So we jumped to immediate, we did a little media release just because we had been, as I said, thinking about it and really, you know, got together end of January and had been working towards getting going on the project. I would imagine that at the next meeting with the city, some of that will be clarified. I don't tend to be the main person. I haven't been yet. I could be because we sort of take turns at various meetings with different people. I haven't personally met with the city. Someone else from our group has.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I'm going to keep going somewhat on this tack. One of the challenges that I believe that you are going to face and that any tent city is going to face is money. And I'm wondering about that particular issue. Do we have any idea how much these particular shelters will cost? And what are we looking at in terms of fundraising? Where are we going on this?
So one of our partners is a builder, and we actually have some draft on some houses drawn up. So we have single tiny homes and then some for couples. And you don't need a permit for anything under 160 square feet, so they will be under that. We will need permits for the larger community kitchen and the other community areas. At Better Tent City, they bought old portables from a school board. So that's something we can look into. We've been talking to the school boards, so they know about this initiative, and that's around a few things, including land. But as I said, we haven't put out a formal proposal looking for land yet. So the cost will be, we're hoping to fundraise. You know, since we've done this really small, quiet launch, we've had so many people reach out saying they want to help, they want to donate, and we want that. It's like, we're just not quite there, but we will be soon. We're looking at all different ways of fundraising. And we think that we can do it really inexpensively because we have a builder on board. So whether we use some recycled materials, whether we're going to do it well, these will be insulated. These will be, you know, warm homes for a Canadian winter and hopefully coolish in the summer because it's getting hotter and hotter. But they'll be well built, insulated. And do you want an actual money amount, like per house?
Sure.
An estimate? I'm going to say like $20,000 a house.
Also, like on the website, it has like an email to if people want to like talk about volunteering or helping. Also, once everything is built and people are in the homes, there's shelter portions of their ODSP and OW, like at a Better Tent City, they pay rent from their shelter portions of their OW and ODSP. So that won't pay for everything, but it'll help.
Okay. I know that we're going to be getting a number of questions. And I also know that Linda Busutil has to leave by about 8:30. But because of her experience in the West End and her role on the school board, I'm wondering, Linda, whether there's any input that you could provide on the possibilities going forward.
Yeah, I think the group is doing the right thing in speaking with the school board about reusing portables. Just lots of discussions, guys. That's all I can suggest right now. Really sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. And thank you for joining us today. And I do want to point out that Linda, Aaron, Kate, and I have provided some background support, but I want to be very, very clear that this is not a city initiative. We are doing it as concerned residents. Now, I know there's going to be tons of questions, and I want to get to all of them. And I think the first one that I need to deal with is the one that's probably on the minds of many people in Guelph, location. What about a location for this? Have we begun to look at a location? Are there some that we would take more seriously? Are there others that we would rule out? Are there locations on public property that the city might be able to offer?
So that's a great question. And it's imminent that we will be asking publicly for private and city-owned land options. So ideally, we think that this community would be located not in the downtown, on the outskirts of downtown, something that's accessible to downtown for folks. As I said, services will come to people just like they come to encampments. And we would prefer service land. So something that we don't have to put in plumbing and electricity, but something that's already there. It would be nice to partner with the city. The city owns land, so we're hopeful there. It'd be nice perhaps to partner like Better Tent City is on a combination of city and school board land. So we hope that it's certainly something accessible and something that probably 2 to 3 acres is what we're looking at.
But just related to the downtown, one question that I want to follow up is, why does the downtown matter so much? What is the issue for people who are living on the street? Why do they congregate to the downtown? And are we going to be able to alleviate that at all? Or is this just going to be the way things are?
All of the services are down there, downtown. Everybody needs to be close to the health center, the Mission, Hope House. Everything that people need is downtown. That's why everybody kind of stays here. Nobody has transportation constantly. If people have a safe place to go and they are warm and they can eat, there will be less traffic downtown, especially when services are coming to meet them where they're at.
And related to those services, another question that I have, what I'm hearing you say is that this will be a fairly full service residential setting for people. What does that mean in terms of things like healthcare, safe injections, social service support, and so on? What could we envision would be available there? And do you have any idea how this would would work. I do see that we do have some people from the support community that are in the restaurant.
And this is one of our goals, is to really start building more relationships with folks from various agencies. As I said, we've started that. I would envision at this early stage something that is supported by the van, for example, that goes out to encampments and provides healthcare. And this is really client-centered. So it's whatever folks need, right? So the van's there, people come, they might have a wound they're concerned about, they might need something for a headache. They might need, who knows? So they're providing those kinds of services. Sometimes they provide regular, you know, checks like monitoring blood pressure, administering medication by either orally or injection. So it would be supported there. It doesn't mean that these folks, just like any of us living in the South End or North or wherever, you can still access your primary healthcare provider. So I'm a primary healthcare provider. A lot of these people are my clients. They'll still come to see me. And if I had the capacity, I would certainly go out and see them. Our model is one of a real multidisciplinary team. So we have outreach folks. I work really closely with a nurse who goes out and does assessments. And then if he needs something prescribed, he'll contact me and we communicate by maybe he'll take a picture of a wound and so that's how we spread our very few resources. So instead of me going out and seeing, you know, five people, I can do consults and maybe consult on 20. So that will still happen. In terms of the food, because food is really important. So people are accessing the Mission and Hope House for meals. I imagine they would still do that to some extent, but it would definitely take off some of the pressure. We're talking about 50 homes. We're not talking about everybody, but it'll be a fair number because that could be as many as 100 people, right? And the shared kitchen, when we went to Better Tent City, I mean, it was lovely. It just felt like, you know, a kitchen where people came in and made a cup of tea and or toast, and they had breakfast out. They served breakfast and dinner every day. They have lots of volunteers. We have amazing food, accessible food programs here in Guelph. So we can, you know, we envision partnering with the Seed. Hope House has some great food initiatives. We, you know, Community Garden. I'm very familiar with the Sheldon community. We have an amazing farm park. So we have lots of great, inexpensive, and sometimes free food. And, you know, these folks that will be living in the community are like you and I. So, you know, I like to cook. So people can also volunteer and cook meals. So we see it as having everything there that people need, but certainly, you know, accessing other things in the community as required.
The one question that seems to be coming up is this a permanent solution? And are we looking at a new form of low-cost housing? Or is this something else? And what do we envision for the future, and not just in Guelph, but in Canada?
I think like a tiny home isn't a permanent solution. While we are trying to advocate for the government to provide more cost-effective housing and more rent-secured housing, this is an option for folks to stabilize, feel secure, and be able to breathe while folks that are not accessing the shelters may not get the chance to, but more housing is needed. There's no like time limit, but our hope is that folks can get into a place where they can be successful for what they feel is successful.
So what I'm hearing is that this actually plays really well into the harm reduction model that we see so often addressing issues of people living homelessly. We're looking at something that's going to provide a step up, but is not the solution to people living on the street. Okay, Tanya, I think you've got a couple of questions, and I'm sure that there are some here within the restaurant. In fact, I see there's some. Tanya.
Okay, so the one question that we received in advance was how many people were homeless in Guelph in 2018 versus now?
The first thing that I can point out is I asked Pastor Kevin down at Royal City Mission yesterday. He said that they have just under 100 and 50 Tupperware bins that they use for people that are on the street. And he said that is nowhere near the number that are on the street. He is skeptical of our counts and believes the numbers are much higher. Liz, being a nurse practitioner, and Ingrid being on the street as well, I would hope that you could comment on that, because I'm not certain we can give a solid number.
In 2018, officially, so the official count, and the officially, I mean, it's complicated. It would be led by the County of Wellington. It was 325, which seems low to me. That was in 2018. And then the more recent, which is not 2024, because it's just early, but 2021, the number was 270. And I don't think that that accurately represents the numbers. And there's numerous reasons for that. A big one is, how do you access people to answer your questionnaire? And we had a pandemic that started in 2020. So you have to look at the methodologies and how the information was gathered. I don't think we have less. I think we have more. And that is just, that's anecdotally from my experience working with folks. And I don't know that the numbers are really that important. I mean, if there's one person sleeping on the street, it's too many people for me. So we know that, you know, 50 tiny home community is not going to solve everything, but it's a start. We felt we had to, you know, start somewhere. And, you know, if it's really successful, maybe there'll be another one. Maybe, you know, with continued advocacy, like Ingrid was saying, you know, at the Guelph Community Health Center, we have an advocacy committee. We're really working hard to get more supported housing. Lots of folks in the community are trying to get, we need more geared to income housing. So with those things coming along, other pieces, hopefully we won't need another tiny home community.
It's also important to note, like, when these counts are being done and the questionnaires are being done, a lot of our folks don't have enough trust with the social services that are asking some of these questions, so they will not do the counts. It's also important to note that since 2021, 90 Carden has closed. So all of the people that were in 90 Carden are now added to that number from 2021.
So we have a question from Warren. Warren.
Thanks, ladies. Liz, I know you do a fabulous job for the community. I have a question. And that is, do we not need a master plan from the city of land available? Because I think there's going to be a tremendous influx of immigration coming. We're going to need a lot more than just tiny homes. And I know we're addressing that time now. But what about a community? A community similar to what was put in a lot of cities, and probably the way the Alice Street and the ward was put together here, with small homes for people to come in and get started, starter homes. And I think we need, from the city, identification of land available for such communities to go forward.
Before I pass it over to Liz, I'm going to try to answer that partially. The city is looking at surplus lands that are available for this kind of a project. It's also investigating the possibility of infill to address your notion of smaller homes, starter homes, and opportunities to ensure that the underhoused in Guelph do have something that's available to them. Now, I'm going to be really, really clear and pretty blunt. Much of the problem that we have here is a consequence of failure of federal and the provincial governments to house over the last 4 years. This is not going to be something that is going to be solved overnight. This is going to probably take a couple of decades to address. But the city is looking at surplus lands, and I'm going to pass it over because I think the other part of the question is not necessarily these kind of shelters, but what about opportunities for small homes?
Our focus is on getting our folks who are suffering right now on the streets into something a little more safe and secure as fast as we can. Right.
Yes, we have over here.
What about existing plugging into like I was on Calvert Hill yesterday, and I noticed St. Agnes has been boarded up for at least 20 years, it has that been considered going into existing structures if we were able to mobilize volunteer workers as Restore does, right, for labor? Has that been thought about? Because raising $1 million for tiny homes, when we already have existing, I don't know if they've been approached or that's been considered at all. Because it's downtown, it's close to everything, right?
That's not something we have looked at. We are looking at a better type of city. The problem is with a lot of the, like, turning that into, like, somewhat of a shelter, is there's people that probably won't access it. Like, sometimes people don't, like, the building aspect of it is quite institutionalized, and it's not a good first step. We are focused on doing what we can, so for the next winter.
And as much as, I hear you, and I think, you know, if it were done, you know, extremely well, I mean, that might be a possibility for another group. Also, when you have lots of folks living in a building with no sort of anchoring services, people there to meet needs, helping to build capacity, what happens is you have a building like 90 Cardin. And I don't know that anybody here was ever at 90 Cardin. And I'm grateful that people had a home, but it wasn't a place that most of us, and probably the people there, wish that it had been much different. It's kind of like the Wild West, and it was better than nothing.
I just want to follow up on that a bit more, Anne. One of the challenges with retrofitting a building is that it's actually more expensive and it's more time consuming. This is something that I understand from talking to the individuals involved is essentially something to get it done before winter comes again. So this is really something that is being done very, very quickly. And the builders have assured that they can put these shelters up. But in order to get permissions for something like a major retrofit of something like St. Agnes's is tremendously, A, costly, B, very political, and C, very, very challenging with permits and so on. The beauty of this, what I've heard, is that these particular shelters, and I use the term shelter more than home, for a particular reason. I don't want us to believe that this is a form of housing such as what we've traditionally associated. But the real beauty of this is that it can be done quickly. It can be done with volunteer labor. And the other thing is that it can be done without necessarily the permission, because I was told by an expert that these will come in under the building code because they are less than 160 square feet. And that gives a tremendous amount of leeway to a volunteer organization as opposed to a school board or a city.
We are going to actually go to Tanya with the online question first.
So the questions are, what is the operational annual cost of Better Tent City? And will the annual cost of the initiative in Guelph also be by donation funding?
Both are good questions. I'm going to answer the first one first. The annual operating costs for anything like this are best looked at through the lens of Peterborough and Kitchener-Waterloo. The Peterborough Tent City for 50 permanent shelters costs $1.5 million a year. This is something that is very, very challenging, but must be recognized that across agencies, this can be spread out. But the city also needs to recognize that we, as a city, not as a community initiative, are taking on something that is going to have an impact upon taxation as well. For the city to build this, the costs are looking to be about $50,000 per unit because of various permissions and things that the city must do. So there really truly is a savings. In terms of the city looking for donations, my understanding is that on the city's project, and I have very little information on this, that there is ventures into private support for this. We just don't know what it is. This particular action, I believe you've already got people that are willing to put up cash and put up possibly land and so on. But I'm going to let one of you speak on that.
Yep. So we've been approached by one land owner. And we're not ready, you know, we're not making that public yet. So we know, like, we have that to fall back on. if we need to. But we also want to really do due diligence. Like, we want to do this, you know, correctly. We want to look at all the options, find the best location.
We are going to look at, like, capital funding and grants and stuff as well. That's in the process as we speak. Yeah.
And as I said, many people have come forward sort of like before we're really ready to start organizing. We don't, we're still organizing a few things, but we've certainly have people, you know, business owners offering to give us 50 fridges for the tiny homes. We have offers of beds and mattresses, and we're a pretty privileged community, and we feel really positive that we're going to be able to get this going quickly and probably, as Phil said, less expensively, because we can do things. We won't need permits for all of the houses. I don't want to speak poorly of the bureaucracy, but, you know, we have, we're a volunteer organization, so we can say we can do it and then beg forgiveness.
So we're going to, just so everybody knows when they're up, we're going to go to Rachel, then Ron, then Kay, then Brian, then I have a question.
Okay.
Rachel.
A question and a couple comments. My main question would be, if these are fitting under 160 feet, how does that fit in terms of service and utilities, and when it comes to Bill 23 and the reduction of development charges, is that something that your builder is willing to implement into that community to make sure that they have all the services that they need? I was also curious how you wanted this to fit into the federal housing advocate plan for October, for August 31st. I know that's coming out before the winter. And to Councillor Alt and Hayden, I was wondering if you knew the outcome of the mayor's meeting with the federal armory, and then the meeting with the CHRC in terms of the bylaw and how that would relate to them. As in, like, a Better Tent City, they have their place. The plumbing and showers and everything are a community center in a building. So, like, there's no, like, retrofitting of piping and stuff like that.
Each of the homes would have heat, a bed. We're not exactly sure. A table, a dresser. You know, it's a small area. It's a small personal area, a chair. And then, as Ingrid said, these the communal areas will have, that's where the running water is. That's where the kitchen is. That's where the bathroom facilities are. So there's their shared area.
Just with regards to the other questions, I want to be very, very clear that any sort of project, whether it's city-based or volunteer-based, will have to address issues of electrical safety and electrical standards. And that is assured. The tent cities that have been erected in Kitchener-Waterloo and in Peterborough have abided all those standards. But I now realize why there would be shared kitchen and shower facilities. And that is particularly because of the limitations on size and the capacity to actually put in personal facilities as well. And that's, we shouldn't miss that. One other point, that the heating is incredibly important, and there's a lot to be learned from what we've seen.
I wanted to also say, for sure, that's one reason for the communal, and maybe that's the initial, but there's lots of benefits of having shared space, right? It builds community. So I think that's key.
The other part with regards to the armory, I'm afraid you're going to have to ask the mayor that. I wasn't aware that he was currently in discussion, but having dealt with the regiment, my understanding is that there is no appetite within the 11th Field Regiment or something like that to occur. But that's my own personal perspective on it. Morgan.
Next, we are going to Ron East.
Thank you. First of all, just to say this is a fantastic initiative, and thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I just wondered about what the county is contributing or should be contributing towards this project. I mean, the city gives them $64 million a year, and so far, they don't seem to be doing any builds of any kind. So what are they doing to help this initiative to happen?
So I think people have spoken with the county. Also, in respect to, like, their shelter portions, they would be getting that. I can't speak to what the county is going to do. We're going forward. We're in talks with people who might want to help us, but we're going forward no matter what.
It's a very good question, and I'm going to defend the county a bit on this one. The county is incredibly strapped, and the facilities that they have at the present time are not receiving the funding that is necessary because of downloading. The county regards this kind of an initiative as outside its mandate, which is to provide social services and housing. This kind of shelf doesn't fit into that. So I'm sure that there will be discussions both at the county and the city level to determine what funding is available. But at this point, it will certainly need the county to address its own budgetary shortfalls as a consequence of downloading housing to municipalities.
So the county is currently in the process of doing more shelter beds. So they're adding another level onto the downtown Gordon Street location, but that's just in the build and funding kind of stages. And so they recently announced that they had a $1 million difference in what they had thought it was going to cost, but it's not as many beds. I think it's 24, and it's going to cost about double because you're putting a whole layer on an apartment. So it's a different sort of situation.
And just to clarify as well, that is within the shelter context. And this is aside from the shelter context. One of the things that I've learned is that, and I hope that maybe one of you can comment on this, many people don't want to go into shelters at all. They consider them to be unsafe for a number of different reasons. And I'm going to pass it over to both of you to explain that a bit, please.
Obviously, one size doesn't fit all. For many different reasons, people don't want to access the shelter, and we're trying to address that in creating another option that's more of a community. Also, it's an emergency shelter, so it is open from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. They have to take all of their things with them when they leave. If you have animals, you can't access the shelter. If you are a couple, you can't be together. And a lot of people don't feel safe away from their partners. So there's many, many reasons why people would not access the shelter.
There's also de facto banning, which is a huge issue because we have one shelter provider within the city of Guelph. So if you get a ban for whatever reason from any location that is operated by Stepping Stone, you are banned from every location that is operated by Stepping Stone. So if you screw up at Gordon, you never get to go anywhere.
We have other questions that have come forward, I understand.
Yeah, we are going to Kay next.
So my question is, there's a lot of wonderful initiatives that have been brought up in our community, as well as surrounding communities. And that, of course, because they've been greatly received because of the need that there is now. Effectively, it sounds great for PR. However, what sets this initiative apart from the others that we've seen?
Well, we're grassroots. We're just a bunch of people that live in Guelph and wanted to do something. Yeah, and some of the other things I think that we've mentioned. So we don't have to fit ourselves into any boxes. We don't have to meet any criteria. Well, we will certainly when things are built, safety, and that's not what I'm talking about. But I think like the fact that we're nimble, that we can get this going, that we have real desire to do it. I don't know of any other housing initiatives that have been brought forward in Guelph. I know Guelph has been talking about it. This is part of the reason we're doing it. Lots of people are talking about it. The mayor's aware of it. Council is aware of it. There was a housing forum. It was limited to a particular number of people. Not everyone was there. Lots of voices. It's great. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that and then what happens. But I anticipate that it will take time. And I don't anticipate there will be a solution before the winter.
I also understand that you're engaging people that have had lived experience. Could you explain why that is, why that matters?
People with lived and living experience are an essential and vital piece to this. Having everyone's input that is going to be living there is what is going to make this successful and work to the best way it can.
Yeah, I mean, I would echo that. We have people in our group who have lived experience. And by that, I mean people who have found themselves in situations where they've been unhoused, living in tents, people with addictions, people with, traumatic past, and people that are working, working right now with the people that we're hoping to house. So we want to have people with living experience have a voice in this. This is really cumbersome trying, just to get things launched. So we're trying to figure out when it is that we bring folks in.
Okay, next we have Brian, then John online, and then I will ask my question. Brian.
Thank you. And I want to echo Ron's comments about how badly needed this is and how you are to be admired for what you're doing. However, there are people in the community who are still the let them get a job, let them eat cake. So in order to alleviate that somewhat, there are a few questions, there are a few things, nitty gritty. The homes have been built, right? The refrigerators are in, the hydro's on and everything else. Who gets to decide who goes in? Is it 1, 2, 3, 4, 49, 50? That's it, okay? Or are there conditions? And concerning those conditions, what about the safety of the other 49 people in there? What about policing? Will the police be looking at this as if I had called about my neighbor, or is it, the tiny homes again? Okay. If a private person donates this land for a time, can they set a time limit on it? Can it be 15 years? Do they have any say in what conditions there would be for people, the residency there? Where am I? Two other things, these are observations. Have you considered the idea of refurbishing shipping? I shouldn't talk about shipping containers these days, but the idea, I've been through several cities in Europe and Eastern Europe where these are being used. They're being half of it for one person, the whole thing for a family, and so forth. And the idea of 160 square feet for one building, fine. But if I were to put 4 or 5 sheds on my property, that adds up to more than 160 feet. Therefore, I need to get a permit. Anyway, I might be wrong with in this particular case. I'm wrong.
First of all, people that think that people should just pull themselves up by the bootstraps, we are willing to have conversations with individuals who are willing to have conversations with us. I think people don't know what they don't know, so there's many different reasons why people cannot do that. And we are willing to have conversations in regards to that. In regards to safety, this will be a staffed site. And I don't think when positive relationships are built, the police aren't needing to be called. And when there's trusting relationships with staff, de-escalation is actually a lot easier than when a person with a uniform enters.
The next question is, how are you going to choose the people to live there?
Good question. We are still working on that. We are figuring out the nitty-gritty details of that because that's been on all of our minds. We're unsure of that process at the time, but it is being discussed.
Next one was land tenure. If somebody is offering land, what about the possibility that they would want it back?
Well, we would have a discussion. I think when we put forward the expression of interest, in terms of land, we're looking at a minimum of 3 years, but of course we'd like more than that. Yeah, I mean, if somebody is interested, they talk to us because we would have a discussion.
Yes, with regards to the public safety issues associated with this, and they are real. We certainly need to acknowledge that. I would encourage people to look at the Peterborough model that is online. All you have to do is look at Peterborough and their tiny homes, and you'll be able to find it on Google. It's worth taking a look at. The other thing to consider is that this particular model is benefiting quite a bit from the working center in Kitchener, I understand. I'm wondering if you could provide a little bit of background on how they did it and what they did in both of those cases.
So the working center was the Herb Street. That was Waterloo. And this is different because this isn't coming. We're not an organization. We're a grassroots organization that's coming together to do this. We're hopeful that we will be partnering with agencies and others. Foundations, we're looking for donors. They're, you know, so open to everything. This is the early stages still for us, although it's short timeline. The other thing I was going to say, shipping containers, we did look at shipping containers. And the site in Waterloo has used shipping containers. We just didn't really like them as well as the tiny homes. They didn't look quite as nice. They didn't seem very warm. They weren't terribly well insulated. There was no window. And it looked, they were all gray and kind of didn't like it.
There's a lot of trauma around being institutionalized too, and it does look quite institutional.
Two questions in the restaurant and one online, Morgan. Where do we go first?
Tanya, can you either ask John's question or ask John to unmute and ask his question?
Well done, both of you and your teams. This is good. Have you looked at portable services, portable showers, washrooms, kitchen facilities? This is a problem that corporations are addressing as a need, and there is certainly stuff available now that you don't have to start from scratch on. I know of a company called Lang in the States that offers this because they're increasingly getting questions from communities with exactly the same problems that we have, and they're looking to solve those issues. And those kinds of portable facilities, which are very good, those take a lot of engineering and planning and building if you make them permanent. And so there is some opportunities to accelerate the winter timeline. If you look at those things, and those things are available for $100,000.
Okay, next we're going to go to Juanita in the restaurant.
Comments mostly. I'm thinking a lot about the visit. I went out to a Better Tent City in Kitchener, and it's a beautiful community with beautiful leadership. And I've been thinking for a while about how to have a similar thing here, we needed a rich donor like Ron Dodge and a community member who was willing to push for it. And it sounds like we have a few people that are willing to put towards that, I'm hoping. The other thing is Nadine, who is incredibly well-respected and lives in the community she's working for. I'm wondering how much, if you have people in mind to staff, because I think there's a special kind of person that would need to staff a place like that, whether or not they live there, they need to have the respect of the community to build a strong community.
I totally agree. We know a lot of wonderful people that I think would be willing to help out on this.
And we agree. We're looking for Nadine.
My name is Donna. This is a fantastic initiative. I'm just wondering, from the fundraising perspective, as a grassroots organization, are you looking at becoming a registered nonprofit? Will you be able to generate tax receipts? And I know from granting organizations, they want you to have that sort of official status before giving lots of money. So just wondered about that.
Yep, we are currently incorporating and working with a charitable organization to charitable organizations for the tax receipt portion and donations.
So until we get our official charitable status, we're working with two charitable organizations, Royal City Mission and Forgotten People Inc.
Yeah, I think this is incredibly important that we recognize that there is support within other caring organizations in Guelph enough that they are prepared to offer their charitable status as a place for people to donate specifically for this project.
One of the things that we have been discussing, it's made mention a couple of times, has been the need to ensure proper heating within these structures that are going to be for people to sleep in. I'm sure we all know, because of how we all work, about Khalil Sevrite from Toronto that constructed 109 tiny shelters, not homes, shelters, and distributed them throughout the various parks in Toronto. I'm wondering if there, I mean, he's not allowed to do that anymore because there's an injunction against him being able to build, you know, the city of Toronto took him to court and everything. And he still has the knowledge of how to insulate a structure whereby the body heat of the individual sleeping there is able to have the space remain warm enough in a Canadian winter. Has there been any connection or thought of connection to be made with Khalil from Toronto?
Do either of you know Khalil?
No.
No, it would appear not at this point, but thank you, Morgan. That, I'm sure it's quite an important resource to have. What I do know from my perspective is that that this particular project has engaged people who've been on the ground with other tent cities. In particular, you've engaged a former student of mine, Tony Storts, as an advisor who was on the ground for the Better Tent City in Kitchener. If you could just outline what kinds of services, how you benefit from what Kitchener did in Peterborough and the use of someone like Tony.
Yeah, Tony wrote a book about it, about doing this. He also is helping us with, he's been on the ground for a Better Tent City. He consults on a lot of things, so he knows what works and what doesn't. He's a mass fountain of knowledge.
And we're so fortunate that we're working with him. So he's going to continue to help us. Yeah, he is the wealth of knowledge, and he really knows what he's doing. Well done, Phil.
But I think what's really important about this is that this is not a project that is starting from scratch. It is, I've always said that plagiarism is the highest form of flattery. And a project like this requires that previous projects be examined to see the strengths and to see the weaknesses. I can state that when I was in the Regional Waterloo's project, I noticed some tremendous deficiencies in the construction that that I think that we could avoid. And in fact, even the workers there alluded to some of them as well. This has to be the case, that we need to rely upon expertise. I understand that you have a builder who's quite prepared to give 100% for this and has done it in the past. And the fact that you have Tony and others who have some knowledge of this will benefit. And that's NIMBYism and the fear that people might have of a Better Tent City locating in their neighborhood. I'm wondering if you can address that, and do we know yet where something like this could potentially be located, and how can we alleviate people's fears?
We are currently thinking of all the problems that may continue to exist to work with the neighborhoods that we might go into, and to try to make it beneficial for everyone, and make sure that everybody is happy before we announce anything.
We know how important it is to communicate and to ask questions and have conversations with people. So we'll continue to do that. We don't know where this will be, but definitely want to be partners with folks. You know, these are people that we work with and are amazing, resilient, strong, interesting, creative folks. So, you know, any community would be lucky to have them.
We also realize that, like, people that own homes are really, really struggling with the cost of everything and are worried about the property values and stuff. So we do realize that and are willing to make this as easy as possible on everybody involved.
I want to thank both of you for coming here. And I want to point out that, in my opinion, this is not going to be easy. There are going to be detractors. And I think that you are likely going to find them not just perhaps from neighborhoods, but even from those in the service care professions who have real doubts about this. Your comments about going slowly and being careful and engaging people, I think, really matter. Communications right from the start about something as unique as a Better Tent City it's essential that people appreciate that this is not intended on increasing harm or threat, but is actually intended on reducing that. and that various social care agencies and various institutions within the community must be engaged in order to make this a success. So to both of you and to all those who you're working with, I truly want to thank you and remind people that there will be opportunities to volunteer. I believe you're putting together a board right now, which is a governance board. And if people have got hammers and they've got saws and toolkits, there'll be plenty of opportunity to get your hands dirty on this. So thank you very much for informing us about a project for, quote, the least amongst us.
Have your say about the downtown infrastructural renewal project by April the 8th. Next week on Breezy Breakfast, we'll be talking with Courtney Bell, a psychotherapist. Are the kids all right? And coming soon on Breezy Breakfast, April 11th, we'll be going analog. And I believe with that, it's a wrap. See you all next week.
Thanks for tuning in. Music provided by Jules Germ, and the podcast was produced by the CFRU Media Center. Breezy Breakfast, where everyone can have a solid meal to start the day.